97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
For goodness sake, kid, keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
I'll ask you, Mr. Bailey, do you know why Alvin Bragg originally declined to move forward with the prosecution of Donald Trump?
I believe the reasonable inference to draw is that the charges aren't supported by the laws or the facts.
So there you have it. The attorney general of the state of Missouri, who was telling Congress about why he thinks Alvin Bragg initially declined to prosecute Donald Trump. We're going to have Attorney General Bailey in studio here in less than 20 minutes. So make sure you join us for that here. Keep it right here on 97.1 FM Talk or join us on the Odyssey app to stream it so you can hear what he has to say. He's once again joining in the fight to make sure that Missourians have their rights protected and that Americans have their rights protected. Even Donald Trump. It's good. It's good to see. I will take your questions on the Annie Fry YouTube chat. And you can come here if you have questions for the attorney general that you would like to have answered. We always love looking at what you have to suggest. So join us on the Annie Fry YouTube chat. You subscribe to the channel. You get to comment in the chat. That's a new rule today. We'll see how it works. There was a news alert that just came out not long ago from Fox News. The New York Court of Appeals on Tuesday rejected former President Trump's bid to have the gag order against him lifted, citing that, quote, no substantial constitutional question is directly involved. Judge Juan Merchan imposed a gag order that restricts the former president and presumptive 2024 GOP presidential nominee from speaking out about witnesses and the case now that Trump's trial has concluded. Trump's lawyers cited the November presidential election in the first debate against President Biden later this month, as well as the First Amendment rights of the former president and his supporters as reason for the order to be lifted. When Merchan refused to lift the gag order, Trump appealed the decision, which the appeals court rejected today. Isn't that something that gag order is going to be applied to Donald Trump in the debate? I find myself every once in a while working through Twitter, just waiting to see what's new or whatever. And one of my favorite things to do to peek at the other side is to just read the comments section. And I know a lot of people would advise against that. I like it because I like to see what the groupthink is. Right, the right side of the aisle has a groupthink. The left side of the aisle certainly has a groupthink. What are the commonalities of what people are saying and responding? Tyrus last Thursday on our show made the comment that he does not believe that Joe Biden is going to debate Donald Trump. He says there's not going to be a debate. If you don't peek in those circles where I'm peeking right now, and of course, on this show, on this station, we have people who use us to peek at the other side as well. And you are all welcome to do so. We're happy that you're here. There's a huge contingent of people who think that Donald Trump is scared to debate Joe Biden and that he's not going to show up to debate at the end of this month. Brad, is there any reason why Donald Trump would be intimidated under all of the circumstances, CNN debate, Jake Tapper, fake Tapper, depending on who's saying it, if it's me or Donald Trump. And is it Dana Bash is going to be the other moderator? I think there's two commercial breaks. You can't consult with your team in the breaks. You can take notes during, but you can't bring notes in. And the mics are going to be muted when the other person is talking. I do not see how any of those rules are benefit or advantage to Joe Biden.
The only rule that I could see, or the only thing that I could see that being a little bit of a benefit to Joe Biden, is the commercial break. I think that that gives him a little bit of reprieve from the intensity of the debate.
It just puts a pause. Is that different than usual, though? I mean, there's always some sort of break.
I was listening, and I forget where I was listening to this on the way in today, and they said that generally the presidential debates don't have breaks. But I remember
I feel like they'd have at least one because they'd run campaign commercials in it.
Right. And they definitely had breaks during the primary debates. So I think that maybe that piece of information was wrong that I heard this morning. But I looked at this and you asked me if I think that there's any reason to look at this and go, Donald Trump's scared to debate. Donald Trump said, I'll debate you anytime, anywhere. And then he said, whatever rules you want. And he let them make the rules.
Why would he throw that? Why would he be so bold as to say that and then look like an idiot to be like, oh, no, I'm scared. Like, no, he's not scared to debate Joe Biden.
No. And the other thing about that is if he didn't like the rules and all that other stuff, he had plenty of time when they were doing the rules to come up with I didn't like this rule. I didn't think this would be fair.
They're still standing, correct?
Right. Right.
I think Joe Biden said that he wanted it to be seated, or somebody said that for him, but I don't think any of it matters. He's not going to be the guy. Forget about it. Our YouTube poll for today. Who wins in a 2024 rematch of 2016? And I am ashamed of myself that I haven't considered the possibility that we have not used Hillary Clinton's name. And there's really no reason why she shouldn't be.
Why she shouldn't be used?
Considered as one of the likely fill-ins.
Yeah, I was trying to think of that, and like in my mind, there's no way they'd pick her. Nobody likes her.
Longer you think about it, there are a lot of people who are not over the ending of 2016.
This is true.
There is a think about, you want to talk about revenge. If you want to talk about people being motivated to be able to right the wrong of 2016, there is absolutely something there.
Yeah. But man, I think that motivates people to vote against her, too. Like, nobody wants to vote for Kamala Harris. We're definitely going to say that. I think there's only slightly more people that would say Hillary Clinton's much more likable.
You think only a few more people would vote for Hillary over Kamala?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I don't. I don't think anybody likes Kamala. I think there are a lot of people who worship Hillary Clinton. Hillary is one of them.
Yeah, but those are the same people that are going to vote for Joe Biden. They're the same people that are going to vote for whoever the Democrats roll out there. I don't know that gets the middle vote back to the Democrats.
I don't think they're going for the middle vote. They can't. Their policies aren't middle. Their policies aren't moderate. Their only policy right now is that they're not Donald Trump. So I don't think policy matters. I think the idea that you have a living, breathing person that can serve 4 years that isn't Trump is the goal.
Yeah, but then you look at it and you said if their policy is not Donald Trump, that was kind of the thing that the American people chose in 2016. They looked at Hillary and said, Donald Trump, not Hillary. So why would they look at Donald Trump now and say, not Donald Trump, Hillary this time?
Because the passion that you have, the disgust that you have for Donald Trump began with Hillary Clinton. It's like going back to your roots. I mean, there are a lot of people who really like Hillary Clinton. I know that we don't understand that, but there are a lot of people who like Hillary Clinton. She was a Secretary of State. She was a senator. She was a First Lady. She has understood how government works. She would be able to come in and immediately understand the operation of, like, she'd be able to take over and take charge immediately and understand what the job entails. Everybody knows where she stands. Peak name notoriety. She is to be avenged. I mean, she is, to me, she has way higher shot at winning the election than Gavin Newsom. She has a way higher shot at winning the election over like a J.B. Pritzker or a Whitmer or, you know, Michelle Obama, I still think is the golden goose for the Democrats. I don't think she wants it, but I think she would do it to protect her family. I don't think it would be to protect her country. I don't think she loves her country. Just ask her. It took her until Obama was the president for her to actually be proud of her country. It's not really what I'm signing up to be the commander in chief and leader of what I consider to be the greatest country in the world. But Hillary Clinton has the apparatus. She has people who would, she could snap her fingers and her system would be in place. The only struggle that I see with the Hillary Clinton possibility, because this is like, How many alarms can you have for a fire? Like all of them.
Yeah,
there's no limit,
all
right?
The alarms, yeah. Alarms are just firehouses that they're bringing in.
I was saying like a 4-alarm fire. Well, I think you can have a 5-alarm fire. This is a 47-alarm fire and all hands on deck. So you've got to look at, like, for any candidate that would replace Joe Biden, and I think it is imminent. I think that it is upon us quickly. It is going to be a historical spectacle if it does happen. You have to look at all the net positives. Well, you have to look at all the positives and all the negatives and find out where the net is. There is an immediate, if it's not Joe Biden, there are people who are going to reconsider voting Democrat. Probably just people who are going to reconsider showing up to vote for the president. I think there are people who cannot stomach a vote for Joe Biden because they think it's a joke. Not a joke. It's a joke. And then I think that there are people who detest Donald Trump but can't bring themselves to vote for Joe Biden, that would bring themselves to vote for other people. And the question is, who would bring the most excitement that would give you the chance to turn around these numbers from Donald Trump? I've heard people say that the poll numbers on Donald Trump are inflated specifically so that if something is to dramatically change and the numbers even come down to earth a little bit, it will look like there's a momentum shift. And that's what they sell. That's where polls come from. That's the persuasion that comes behind the polls. But our poll today is, who wins a 2024 rematch of 2016? Is it Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton? And I think that your immediate reaction to that question is going to be different than maybe your reaction at 1:30 or 2 o'clock today after you've thought about it and become frightened like myself. Oh, my gosh. She came out at the Tonys, which is kind of what everybody, like, she showed up and she's like, hey, guys. And I thought, what is she doing? Oh, my gosh. That's kind of the reaction that I had. And I'm going to say this, and I don't care what y'all think, but she looked great. She was at the Tonys, and she had a style. She looked radiant. She was beautiful. And yes, I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. It's one of the biggest pet peeves that I have. Folks, listen to the words that I'm saying. I know that it's in vogue to, like, make fun of Hillary Clinton and her pantsuits and all of that stuff. There are so many things about Hillary Clinton to criticize that you don't have to just dip your toe in the most shallowest of waters to talk about how she looks and what she wears. Go look at her at the Tonys. She looked great. And I'm not saying she looked great for Hillary Clinton. She looked very nice. She looked beautiful. If she looked like a world leader, it's scary crap. I don't like it at all. Did everybody just unsubscribe from the channel?
No, I'm watching. They're doing good, but there are a lot of the looky eyes.
That doesn't mean that I like her. I'm not one of them. It's not like, oh, wow, she looks great. I think I'll vote for her. No, I think with my brain. I understand that she would be a disaster for the country, way worse than Joe Biden, because she would have her wits about her, I think. We have not been talking about Hillary Clinton. She has been waiting on deck, or maybe in the hole, waiting to the person on deck, you know, like, beat them in a very above board political match.
Yeah. In a very non-literal sense.
Yeah. We haven't been talking about it. It's like journalistic malfeasance on my part. I messed this up. What is she doing here? Everybody, what has she been doing the whole time? Just imagine, though. Here's the treat. If Donald Trump and Hillary are the candidates on the ballot in November, somebody is going to lose and somebody's not going to believe they lost. Guaranteed. Can you bet on that in Vegas? That the loser of the 2024 election challenges the election? I am placing that bet, if you can. That's a sure win. I don't like it. I'm not happy about this. I wasn't excited to see that she looked radiant at the Tonys and then everybody stood up and slobbered all over themselves because Hillary Clinton had once again arrived. You know that she wants it.
Oh, yeah.
This is the problem. I don't think I said this out loud. I started to tee this up. Oh, yeah. I think I started going into that she looked very nice. And then everybody lost their minds, in my mind. The Obamas and the Clintons hate each other. That's my understanding. They do not play nice. If Obama is in charge right now, like many of us suspect, I mean, the strangest of bedfellows in the political world, is Hillary Clinton the savior? He's like the hero they need, but he's the one they deserve. Is that what we've arrived at, where Hillary Clinton's going to come and save the day for the Obamas? Donald Trump needs to freaking win. No questions asked. Go make it happen. I need to know from you who wins in a 2024 rematch of 2016. That is the YouTube live chat poll question for today. You got to subscribe to comment. I'm not 100% sure you got to subscribe to vote, but go check it out and let me know. I need to know, is it Trump or is it Hillary? Because that question is upon us. It is in the realm of possibility. And again, my sincerest apologies for not talking about or thinking about this sooner. I'm really disappointed in myself. It's a disaster. Attorney General Andrew Bailey is going to be in studio with us next. And if you've got questions for the Attorney General, go on the YouTube chat and leave us your comments leave your questions in the comments, and I can work some of those in. He's testifying in front of Congress. He continues to, among many red state AGs, push back against the leftist ways of the Biden administration. What is he up to right now? You join us here on 97.1 on the Odyssey app or on the Annie Fry YouTube channel.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And follow along. We're glad you're here. Andrew Bailey in studio next.
First of all, this conviction was a Democrat hoax started by him as election interference and really attacking a political opponent never been seen before in this country. It's done by third world countries, by banana republics, never been done by this country. And it's a disgrace, and he's a disgrace. I mean, with his record and his family's record, he's a disgrace to have done it. And the gloves have come off because of it. And frankly, it allows you to speak more freely.
That's pretty much the soundbite that we've gotten from Donald Trump regularly about a lot of his legal challenges that he's been facing. It's a hoax, that there is corruption, so on and so forth. And it's really hard to look at what he's been dealing with and go, well, I don't know about that. It seems pretty corrupt. I hope if I'm ever on trial, I don't get the Trump treatment. And joining us in studio now, excited to have the Attorney General for the state of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, in studio with us. Welcome to the studio. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. I want to talk about the gag order right now, because you've been pushing back against the gag order that is potentially going to be applied to Donald Trump with the Jack Smith trials. So every time I'm talking about this with my audience and for my own benefit, I feel like we have to take things off the table so that we know what we are talking about and what we aren't talking about. Today, Judge Marchand, they appealed the gag order. Let me make sure I say this right. In the Manhattan trial, Trump appealed it, and the appeals court came down today and said the gag order stays. Have you heard that latest news?
You know what? That is a recent development, and I saw a headline, but haven't had time to fully drill down on that. But, you know, there is this issue of Jack Smith seeking the gag order in the federal prosecution in that case that's pending right now in the United States District Court in Florida.
Okay.
And whether or not to impose a gag order in that instance is actively being litigated in an issue that my office has filed an amicus brief against imposition of the gag order. There's a strong constitutional presumption against gag orders is violative of our First Amendment right to free speech. It's important for folks to remember the right to free speech applies not only to the speaker, but to listeners. So you have this presumption against violating people's First Amendment rights. That presumption should be heightened when you're talking about a presidential candidate in a campaign cycle. That impacts Missourians.
Yeah.
Because we don't get to hear from our chosen presidential candidate. That is unconstitutional. One of the elements in analyzing whether or not a gag order is appropriate is, does it prejudice the defendant's right to a fair trial? Well, if it's President Trump's right to a fair trial and he wants to waive that right, who is Jack Smith to tell him he can't do it?
Mm-hmm.
So Missourians are impacted. President Trump is negatively impacted. Thus, Missourians are impacted. This is a farce from the word go. And the fact that they would even be considering gag orders in these cases points to the illicit witch hunt nature of these prosecutions.
So I think that's a really important point, because it's like one of those things that I kind of understand. But when you put it out there in plain words, I go, yeah, that's right. My ability to understand the perspectives of the people involved as a voter, as a constituent, that is as important as Donald Trump's ability to speak out on it. You have a ton of legal experience. How common, in what cases do people whose names we've never heard of before or never will hear of again, How often are gag orders implemented?
Yeah, it's very uncommon for the reason that there's a strong constitutional presumption against imposing gag orders. So it would have to be a really egregious case with high publicity where it would be the defendant's concern that that defendant, that he or she as a defendant might get the right to a fair trial. So the fact that Jack Smith and Alvin Bragg have moved for these gag orders, again, underlies or emphasizes how illicit these prosecutions really are.
We've got the Attorney General for the state of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, in studio with us right now. I'll just read from you. I want to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the Jack Smith cases here in a second. But since we're on the topic of gag orders, this is news as of late this morning. The New York Court of Appeals on Tuesday rejected former President Trump's bid to have the gag order against him lifted, citing that, quote, no substantial constitutional question is directly involved.
Yeah.
Attorney General, thoughts?
Yeah, that's absurd on its face. I mean, again, it's Missourians' right to hear from a presidential candidate. This isn't just some average criminal defendant. This is an individual who's running for the highest public office in the land, has been, the Missouri Republicans have caucused in favor of that, overwhelmingly in favor of that candidate. And for Missourians to be denied access to that candidate, be denied the ability to hear from that candidate, it creates a constitutional crisis of the New York State Court's own making.
So I think that, like, my constant thought is, we're living in an alternate reality right now that starts at the peak. Joe Biden's Department of Justice, and I say Joe Biden's name specifically because I think he is in charge of what is going on at the Department of Justice.
He's responsible.
Not
in charge. Responsible.
Yeah. He's the name.
Yeah.
He's got the name on the mailbox out front. It seems as though if Donald Trump wins in November and is sworn in January, that we could move from a 2024 reality into a 2025 reality. And all of this stuff would just look very different in the justice system, which seems frightening in and of itself, that the person at the top could affect that much about how justice is employed for Americans. Is it true that if Donald Trump becomes the president, that these things could kind of turn over on their heads?
They absolutely could. But I think, to your point, and I think you do a really good job of emphasizing this point, it's that the lawfare, you can't look at it in isolation. We can't look at it in terms of, it's important when we get into the gritty detail and the legal issues that we drill down on individual cases, but you can't look at lawfare in terms of, oh, well, Alvin Bragg's prosecuting him. Oh, Jack Smith's prosecuting him. Oh, Fannie Willis is prosecuting him. Oh, there's a civil suit by Letitia James. There's also government censorship, where Biden's Department of Justice and others have suppressed conservative voices on big tech social media platforms. There's gag order censorship of President Trump. There's that civil sanction. There's attempts in blue states to kick President Trump off the ballot unconstitutionally, again, depriving Missourians of their right to vote for their chosen presidential candidate. And so you can't look at the trees in isolation. You got to put all that together and look at the forest and say, this is a scary day in our republic. This is a frightening day. The Constitution exists to protect us from the government, and the government exists to protect our rights. And yet here, that very same government at federal and state levels is being weaponized against one individual who's a stand-in for everybody else who deigns to think the way he does.
Yeah.
And that is a frightening, frightening day in this republic.
Yeah. Andrew Bailey speaking with us here in the studio, the Attorney General for the state of Missouri. When I think about how public this is and how consuming this is for people's attention, if they can do it to Donald Trump, imagine if the cameras aren't there, the media coverage isn't there, the political fallout isn't there, and somebody else is in that defendant seat. That is very frightening.
So let's talk about the case that Alvin Bragg brought and the constitutional violations against the president. 34 counts of falsifying a business record. And if you look at that indictment, every single count refers to falsifying a business record to conceal, quote unquote, some other crime.
Yeah.
Without defining what
Which
the crime is.
What?
We have a due process right to have notice of the charges brought against us. And you know why they didn't define the other crime? Because they were all related to 2016 that were outside the statute of limitations. Well, the statute of limitations exists to prevent parties from sandbagging claims. And yet that's what Alvin Bragg did. He bootstrapped that other nebulous other crime that's outside the statute of limitations to something he could actually charge, didn't give the president proper notice. That's especially bad when you look at the New York statute, section 175.10, falsifying business records in the state of New York. It provides an affirmative defense. Well, that's rare in the law. And an affirmative defense requires the defendant to put on a preponderance of the evidence. How can Donald Trump go get evidence if he doesn't even know what the state's accused him of doing wrong.
I have a theory that, you know, when you see someone go through trial, they've been found guilty, that the hope of society is that they will have learned their lesson and they, if given the opportunity to be free again, wouldn't commit the crime again. I have a theory that Donald Trump wouldn't know how to commit the crime again. He wouldn't know what to do to commit the crime again.
Exactly. Doesn't know what the crime is. The business records themselves enumerated payments to entities who were in fact paid. That's an authentic business record.
Yeah.
It's that bootstrapping onto this nebulous other crime. It's like we've got a chain link of invisible links, and you got to put all those together to get to the predicate offense. Totally violates due process. This is a constitutional, a violation of his constitutional rights. And if they can do it to him, they can absolutely do it to any one of us.
Yeah, that's the scariest part of it for me. You filed a brief to combat the unconstitutional gag order for President Trump in the Florida case.
Yes, in both the Alvin Bragg New York prosecution and Florida.
But so it includes both of them. Vicky asked on our YouTube channel, they're watching here right now, can you ask Attorney General Bailey what happens if Biden brings up the trial at the debate?
Yeah, I mean, look, it would be I'm sure he will. He's out stumping. I mean, he had a rally in front of the Manhattan courthouse where he had Robert De Niro there as a surrogate. I mean, this is a disgusting weaponization of government for political gain. And make no mistake about it. You know, everything President Biden is doing is, again, a weaponization of the government against a primary political opponent. Look at the censorship on big tech where he's silencing conservative voices. We've got to continue to push that lawsuit forward, Missouri v. Biden, to protect our right to free speech on big tech as we move into an election cycle. These gag orders that deprive us of access to our presidential candidate, we've got to hold wrongdoers accountable. That includes President Biden. Look at the student loan case. He is unlawfully trying to buy off votes in a key demographic where he's losing ground.
Yes.
And so, I don't think President Biden's going to be awake enough at that debate to be sharp enough to bring that up. It would be shameful if he did. And, at the end of the day, I think
won't stop him.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it depends on,
if
they get him primed for the debate round. But he should be ashamed of himself. He is fighting to pervert the law to turn the United States of America into a third world banana republic. This is a man who supposedly has dedicated his life to public service. It is shameful that we've reached the nadir of depravity under President Biden's watch, and it's his responsibility.
Attorney General Andrew Bailey in studio with us here on the Annie Frye Show. Let me ask you this question. Do you think that Joe Biden is capable of, has the mental capacity to do the job of the president of the United States?
Absolutely not.
Is there any, because what we hear from the White House is you've been deceived by your eyeballs that have been watching unedited footage that's been released. The attorney general here, you've been duped. You think that he's maybe with it behind closed doors and what we see is not the real Joe Biden?
No way. There's too much evidence in the public domain of him, his inability to negotiate steps or stairs or being confused when he's on stage, his inability to directly answer questions, his mumbling, his erratic behavior. Take all of that and couple it with what the special prosecutor found when they declined to charge him with the same offense for which they are actively and vehemently pursuing President Trump. That he lacked the mental state necessary to form culpability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can't be responsible for a crime you've committed, how can you run the United States of America?
Yeah, that's a great question. You'd have to have your hands on lots of levers or have somebody who has the hands on the levers for you. I want to ask you in the next segment, because we're going to keep you here for one more segment today. I want to ask you in the next segment about some connections of what's going on the national stage versus what we're seeing here in the state of Missouri. And we're going to bring up that one name, Kim Gardner, that we haven't talked about in a while. We're going to talk to the attorney general about that in the next segment. But I do want to, on the Joe Biden question, on the lawfare question right now, I have been of the mind very vocally that I do not think Joe Biden's the guy in November. I think that they're going to work to replace them. From what I understand, you got to get your name on a ballot. Joe Biden's name is going to be on the Missouri ballot right now. Do you see constitutional challenges from state to state or specifically Missouri should the Democrats decide to make a swap of their nominee? Is that an easy thing to do?
Yeah, I think that should be extremely challenging and should be illegal and unconstitutional. Early voting in a lot of these states has already begun or will begin shortly to swap out the presidential candidate in the 11th hour, I think, is a frightening bait and switch. These issues should have been resolved long before now. And shame on President Biden's family for not taking care of their elderly patriarch and pulling him off the ballot and telling him, hey, it's time to retire and go home.
I agree. I cannot understand what Jill Biden is doing. But she's a doctor, so I guess she knows. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, more with the Attorney General for the state of Missouri. We've got Andrew Bailey here in studio, and I'm going to ask him about Kim Gardner. Where has she been? She's been really hard to find. She's like the greatest hide-and-seek player ever. I think they found her. And that Sabina was or that was served, and we'll find out what the Kim Gardner status is right now with the Attorney General and get a little Missouri update when we come back. Don't go away.
You're listening to the Annie Fry Show. Hey, yeah. Interact with Annie on Facebook. The Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Excited to have the Attorney General for the state of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, in studio with us. We just spent a whole segment talking about lawfare, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, gag order. So if you missed that, rewind on the Odyssey app, get the podcast, find us on Facebook, or I should say YouTube, and check it out. We'll post it later as well. Thank you for being in here. It's good to have you in studio. We've had many conversations. I don't know if we've ever done this in studio
before. Yeah, excited to be here in person. Appreciate you hosting us.
So I wanted to ask, I wanted to bring up a name, Kim Gardner. What has she been up to?
In hiding, and rightfully so. You know, this is a woman who unlawfully refused to do her job. She had a 96% non-prosecution rate of reported crimes. And at some point, people stopped calling the police because she won't do anything about it. She did more to destroy this city, to undermine victims' rights. Victims have rights to under the Missouri Constitution and state statute. 542 businesses left downtown St. Louis because of crime.
Yeah.
So this woman was had an incredibly disastrous impact on St. Louis City and on the whole region, entire state. And so, you know, filing the lawsuit that we filed to remove her and pushing that lawsuit forward until she vacated office was absolutely the right answer. We would have won that lawsuit. She left office because of that lawsuit. The auditor has been trying to find her so that she can do a closeout audit and explain how she was using public funds. And she's been avoiding service of process to get her to sit for a deposition.
Why would she avoid it?
Well, I mean, in the criminal context, a defendant's flight is used as consciousness of guilt.
I mean, I'm just thinking, I don't know the laws, but I'm thinking, what are you running from?
Yeah, well, and that's right. And I think, you know, she's got enormous personal, professional liability on her licensure. Attorneys have
her lawyer's license or her nurse's license?
That's a good way. I can only speak to the attorney's license. I don't know about the nursing license. I'm sure there might be problems
there,
too.
You're not a doctor, too? Okay.
Yeah, but you know, that her bar license, she's already been disciplined once very publicly for some misbehavior. You know, you've got civil liability to the victims that she abused by not bringing their cases and not keeping them informed. You know, anytime a prosecutor exceeds or violates their scope of their statutory authority, that prosecutor has potentially waived sovereign immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be evidence of that as well. Use of public funds, you know, going to nursing class during
the
day.
She's still in big trouble.
Exactly. Yeah, this isn't over. And so, yeah, if you're Kim Gardner, you absolutely don't want to have to sit for testimony under oath. That's why she left office, because the same day that she resigned, the judge was going to order her to sit for deposition in my case.
Hmm.
So that's what she's been avoiding all along.
She sees you in her nightmares. We see her in our nightmares. How much of the state of St. Louis right now? I think I noticed, I read a story about the St. Louis Police Department has put in a hub. That's like right real close to where we are downtown right now. Because I've always said, like, we need to flood the city with the presence of police. They need to be seen. They need to be interacting kindly with people on a daily basis and being able to understand that if they make an arrest for a crime that is committed, that the system is going to take it from there and get the bad guys off the street. How responsible is Soros-funded Kim Gardner for the current state of St. Louis?
Yeah, I mean, she bears enormous responsibility. The weight of that responsibility is on her shoulders, and it's because police officers felt like she was going to prosecute them for doing their jobs. They didn't have the support of the legal structure of the city of St. Louis with her at the helm. So it's not only being seen and being present, but being supported by the city. That's really critical. And pay is one thing. They need pay. They need benefits. They need the police officers' Bill of Rights to protect them. But they need to know that the cases that they're investigating are going to be prosecuted, and that they're going to be treated fairly when they bring those cases to the circuit attorney's office. And that's one thing Kim Gardner was absolutely not doing that we restored once she was out of office and then turned over to the current circuit attorney, who's continuing that.
We've got the Attorney General for the state of Missouri here in studio with us, Andrew Bailey. It really looks like on the national scale, on the federal scale, that the Justice Department is being used for political purposes. And in St. Louis, it seems as though there have been political interests to create a status quo in a city that has destroyed the city. I mean, it's not beyond saving, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of people who care more about bringing the city back than maybe the risk of the investment they might have to make to do it.
I think that's absolutely right. Again, Kim Gardner dug the city into, and really the entire region and the state into such a hole. It's going to take time to dig out. I think some of the right things are happening now to make that happen. You know, again, supporting our law enforcement officers and ensuring that their cases are prosecuted, that we're holding wrongdoers accountable. You know, there's a lot of parallels between what you see from Alvin Bragg in the state of New York and what we saw with Kim Gardner, with the differences in that tale of two cities, that we had systems in place that worked and took care of the problem here in St. Louis. So, for instance, when Kim Gardner, a Soros-backed prosecutor, just like Alvin Bragg, a Soros-backed prosecutor, when Kim Gardner was prosecuting certain cases like the McCloskeys, the court said, whoa, hold on. You are personally interested in this.
Yeah.
You have campaigned on this. You cannot be the prosecutor on this case, and disqualified her and gave the case to somebody else. That is the judiciary, a system in place to protect individual rights, protect the integrity of the system, and it worked. In Missouri, once we crossed that threshold where she was at that 96% non-prosecution rate and was letting violent crime run rampant in the streets, had turned over control of the streets to gangs and criminals, I filed the lawsuit to get rid of her. The writ of quo we're onto. That's a system in place at the state level that worked. New York, those systems failed. New York has two different processes to censure rogue prosecutors. Neither have been used. The judiciary allowed Alvin Bragg to be politically motivated. He's been involved in civil litigation against President Trump. He's worked with Biden's crooked Department of Justice in recruiting the third ranking official from Biden's DOJ, who's also a DNC consultant, to come help him and lead the trial court level prosecution. You can't tell me that's not political motivation. On its face, that's an impropriety that's incurable. He should have been disqualified from the case. The systems in New York failed. In Missouri, we use the systems to fix the problem. At the root of all of this is the Vera Institute. That's a Soros-funded organization committed to the dismantling of the criminal justice system. The Biden's Department of Justice administers grants on behalf of the Vera Institute. You know who the recipient of both of those grants, who both offices were recipients of those grants? The Manhattan District Attorney's Office, Kim Gardner's Circuit Attorney's Office. There's deep connections here, that a common thread that runs through all of this, and it again establishes how illicit this witch hunt prosecution
was. What is the answer, though, to push back against these? Like, it's a very low investment for George Soros, who has political funny money to spend, with a big reward. Like, he can invest in these local DAs at a low cost relatively to like picking the president or whatever. And he's done it so successfully across the country. What can the Republicans do to fight back? I mean, we need the monopoly guy on our side.
Yeah, well, that's true. I think being aware when dark money groups are trying to buy political offices, that's not to help the people in those jurisdictions. Dark money groups buying political offices is always going to be a bad thing, and the people should be on the lookout for that. I think the other piece is, again, having the systems in place and having leaders who are willing to use the systems in place to eliminate the problem. And in Missouri, that's worked. It's clearly not worked elsewhere.
We've got like three. Can we go a little bit longer here? We got just a few minutes left here. But the Surgeon General warning about social media usage for kids. This is completely off the topic of other things. But I know your dad. You got your family guy. And I talk an awful lot about being the mean mom, along with my husband, who is affectionately the mean dad, on massively limiting phone exposure. So no social media for my kids, 14-year-old boy and down. I'm not as a parent going to go, well, the Surgeon General says, and my kids are going to go, okay, mom, not going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
But I do think that we don't know what we don't know right now. And everything that we are learning seems very bad for kids. And I'm curious, like, in your opinion, as a conservative Republican attorney general, where is the right regulation on this?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's something that my office has been engaged in both. I want Missouri to be the safest state in the nation for children. Getting to be a dad's the best thing that ever happened to me. I got a heart for protecting kids. And to that end, my office launched an investigation into big tech social media firms who we have every reason to believe, based on whistleblower testimony, were manipulating algorithms to get kids addicted to screen time so they can then harvest the data from those young children with no parental consent or warning.
And
that's
serve them ads.
That's right.
They're making money off of it.
That's right. And so they're marketing it to kids and then rigging the product to make it more addictive to kids so they can gain economic benefit from the kids without the parents knowing what's going on. That's problematic. We've launched an investigation. We'll hold wrongdoers accountable. I think that at the end of the day, Congress has a role to play here. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act has created this big tech monopoly where they're so few market participants that consumers don't have good options.
Yeah, that's true.
As consumers, we don't have the information we need, and the marketplace is insulated from kind of the open market impulses that would create some transparency and benefit consumers. Section 230 of the CDA needs to be amended.
We got 2 minutes left. The regulation, it sounds like, needs to be on the institutions, not necessarily on the families.
Yeah, look, parents need to parent their kids, and that's a parental rights issue for me. But I think that the government has created a monopoly and then has insulated that monopoly from any kind of open market impulses or civil liability by parents who may want to bring suit. It's kind of like this tobacco industry in the 1990s. Remember how it was revealed that the tobacco industry was, chemically altering their product to make it more addictive and then specifically marketing it to children. And several states took action and there was a master settlement agreement and that market was forever changed and reformed. I see the same thing on the horizon for big tech. It may look different in its execution, but the same thing's going to happen.
Well, I would like more data to back up what I'm saying to my kids, as if showing them a chart would make them understand.
That's right.
No.
I feel better though, right? I mean,
here's the deal, folks. Parents, what you got to do is when you take away the fun things the other kids are doing, then you have to participate in living life with your kids in fun ways that other families don't spend time doing. Because no kid really wants to spend all day staring at a phone. It is an addiction.
I think they'd rather hang out with their mom and dad, or at least my kids. You know, they're still young enough that they appreciate that.
I don't know if they want to hang out with mom and dad. You got to take them to a cool place where mom and dad also is.
and then you
are all together. Maybe bring some friends along. Attorney General Andrew Bailey, thank you for coming in today. It's been great having you.
Thanks, Annie. Appreciate you.
We appreciate you as well. On X at AG Andrew Bailey. Go follow him there and you can keep up to date with all of the legal action that he's continuously taking on behalf of the Missourians. And as an adopted Missourian myself, even in Illinois, it's nice to know that freedom is still being protected somewhere. We'll have all of this up on the podcast. Join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. We're going to be back with Jim Carafano at 1:25 in the next hour and a possible Joe Biden executive order on immigration at 1. We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.
You're listening to the Annie Fry Show. Hey, yeah. Interact with Annie on Facebook. The Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Excited to have the Attorney General for the state of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, in studio with us. We just spent a whole segment talking about lawfare, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, gag order. So if you missed that, rewind on the Odyssey app, get the podcast, find us on Facebook, or I should say YouTube, and check it out. We'll post it later as well. Thank you for being in here. It's good to have you in studio. We've had many conversations. I don't know if we've ever done this in studio
before.
Yeah,
excited to be here in person. Appreciate you hosting us.
So I wanted to bring up a name, Kim Gardner. What has she been up to?
In hiding, and rightfully so. You know, this is a woman who unlawfully refused to do her job. She had a 96% non-prosecution rate of reported crimes. And at some point, people stopped calling the police because she won't do anything about it. She did more to destroy this city, to undermine victims' rights. Victims have rights to under the Missouri Constitution and state statute. 542 businesses left downtown St. Louis because of crime.
Yeah.
So this woman had an incredibly disastrous impact on St. Louis City and on the whole region, entire state. And so, you know, filing the lawsuit that we filed to remove her and pushing that lawsuit forward until she vacated office was absolutely the right answer. We would have won that lawsuit. She left office because of that lawsuit. The auditor has been trying to find her so that she can do a closeout audit and explain how she was using public funds. And she's been avoiding service of process to get her to sit for a deposition.
Why would she avoid it?
Well, I mean, in the criminal context, a defendant's flight is used as consciousness of guilt.
I mean, I'm just thinking, I don't know the laws, but I'm thinking, what are you running from?
Yeah, well, and that's right. And I think, you know, she's got enormous personal, professional liability on her licensure. Attorneys have
her lawyer's license or her nurse's license?
That's a good way. I can only speak to the attorney's license. I don't know about the nursing license. I'm sure there might be problems
there,
too.
You're not a doctor, too? Okay.
Yeah, but you know, that her bar license, she's already been disciplined once very publicly for some misbehavior. You know, you've got civil liability to the victims that she abused by not bringing their cases and not keeping them informed. You know, anytime a prosecutor exceeds or violates their scope of their statutory authority, that prosecutor has potentially waived sovereign immunity.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be evidence of that as well. Use of public funds, you know, going to nursing class during
the
day.
She's still in big trouble.
Exactly. Yeah, this isn't over. And so, yeah, if you're Kim Gardner, you absolutely don't want to have to sit for testimony under oath. That's why she left office, because the same day that she resigned, the judge was going to order her to sit for deposition in my case.
Hmm.
So that's what she's been avoiding all along.
She sees you in her nightmares. We see her in our nightmares. How much of the state of St. Louis right now? I think I noticed, I read a story about the St. Louis Police Department has put in a hub. That's like right real close to where we are downtown right now. Because I've always said, like, we need to flood the city with the presence of police. They need to be seen. They need to be interacting kindly with people on a daily basis and being able to understand that if they make an arrest for a crime that is committed, that the system is going to take it from there and get the bad guys off the street. How responsible is Soros-funded Kim Gardner for the current state of St. Louis?
Yeah, I mean, she bears enormous responsibility. The weight of that responsibility is on her shoulders, and it's because police officers felt like she was going to prosecute them for doing their jobs. They didn't have the support of the legal structure of the city of St. Louis with her at the helm. So it's not only being seen and being present, but being supported by the city. That's really critical. And pay is one thing. They need pay. They need benefits. They need the police officers' Bill of Rights to protect them. But they need to know that the cases that they're investigating are going to be prosecuted and that they're going to be treated fairly when they bring those cases to the circuit attorney's office. And that's one thing Kim Gardner was absolutely not doing that we restored once she was out of office and then turned over to the current circuit attorney who's continuing that.
We've got the attorney general for the state of Missouri here in studio with us, Andrew Bailey. It really looks like on the national scale, on the federal scale, that the Justice Department is being used for political purposes. And in St. Louis, it seems as though there have been political interests to create a status quo in a city that has destroyed the city. I mean, it's not beyond saving, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of people who care more about bringing the city back than maybe the risk of the investment they might have to make to do it.
I think that's absolutely right. Again, Kim Gardner dug the city into, and really the entire region and the state into such a hole. It's going to take time to dig out. I think some of the right things are happening now to make that happen. You know, again, supporting our law enforcement officers and ensuring that their cases are prosecuted and that we're holding wrongdoers accountable. You know, there's a lot of parallels between what you see from Alvin Bragg in the state of New York and what we saw with Kim Gardner, with the differences in that tale of two cities, that we had systems in place that worked and took care of the problem here in St. Louis. So, for instance, when Kim Gardner, a Soros-backed prosecutor, just like Alvin Bragg, a Soros-backed prosecutor, when Kim Gardner was prosecuting certain cases like the McCloskeys, the court said, whoa, hold on. You are personally interested in this.
Yeah.
You have campaigned on this. You cannot be the prosecutor on this case, and disqualified her and gave the case to somebody else. That is the judiciary, a system in place to protect individual rights, protect the integrity of the system, and it worked. In Missouri, once we crossed that threshold where she was at that 96% non-prosecution rate and was letting violent crime run rampant in the streets, had turned over control of the streets to gangs and criminals, I filed the lawsuit to get rid of her. The writ of quo warranto. That's a system in place at the state level that worked. New York, those systems failed. New York has two different processes to censure rogue prosecutors. Neither have been used. The judiciary allowed Alvin Bragg to be politically motivated. He's been involved in civil litigation against President Trump. He's worked with Biden's crooked Department of Justice in recruiting the third ranking official from Biden's DOJ, who's also a DNC consultant, to come help him and lead the trial court level prosecution. You can't tell me that's not political motivation. On its face, that's an impropriety that's incurable. He should have been disqualified from the case. The systems in New York failed. In Missouri, we use the systems to fix the problem. At the root of all of this is the Vera Institute. That's a Soros-funded organization committed to the dismantling of the criminal justice system. The Biden's Department of Justice administers grants on behalf of the Vera Institute. You know who the recipient of both of those grants, who both offices were recipients of those grants? The Manhattan District Attorney's Office, Kim Gardner Circuit Attorney's Office. There's deep connections here, that a common thread that runs through all of this, and it again establishes how illicit this witch hunt prosecution
was.
What is
the answer, though, to push back against these? Like, it's a very low investment for George Soros, who has political funny money to spend, with a big reward. Like, he can invest in these local DAs at a low cost relatively to like picking the president or whatever. And he's done it so successfully across the country. What can the Republicans do to fight back? I mean, we need the monopoly guy on our side.
Yeah, well, that's true. I think being aware when dark money groups are trying to buy political offices, that's not to help the people in those jurisdictions. Dark money groups buying political offices is always going to be a bad thing, and the people should be on the lookout for that. I think the other piece is, again, having the systems in place and having leaders who are willing to use the systems in place to eliminate the problem. And in Missouri, that's worked. It's clearly not worked elsewhere.
We've got like three. Can we go a little bit longer here? We got just a few minutes left here. But the Surgeon General warning about social media usage for kids. This is completely off the topic of other things. But I know your dad. You got your family guy. And I talk an awful lot about being the mean mom, along with my husband, who is affectionately the mean dad, on massively limiting phone exposure. So no social media for my kids, 14-year-old boy and down. I'm not like I'm not as a parent going to go, well, the Surgeon General says, and my kids are going to go, okay, mom, not going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
But I do think that we don't know what we don't know right now. And everything that we are learning seems very bad for kids. And I'm curious, like, in your opinion, as a conservative Republican attorney general, where is the right regulation on this?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's something that my office has been engaged in. Both, you know, I want Missouri to be the safest state in the nation for children. Getting to be a dad's the best thing that ever happened to me. I got a heart for protecting kids. And to that end, my office launched an investigation into big tech social media firms who we have every reason to believe, based on whistleblower testimony, were manipulating algorithms to get kids addicted to screen time so they can then harvest the data from those young children with no parental consent or warning.
And serve them ads.
That's
right. And they're making money off of it.
That's right. And so they're marketing it to kids and then rigging the product to make it more addictive to kids so they can gain economic benefit from the kids without the parents knowing what's going on. That's problematic. We've launched an investigation. We'll hold wrongdoers accountable. I think that at the end of the day, Congress has a role to play here. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act has created this big tech monopoly where there's so few market participants that consumers don't have good options.
Yeah, that's true.
As consumers, we don't have the information we need, and the marketplace is insulated from kind of the open market impulses that would create some transparency and benefit consumers. Section 230 of the CDA needs to be amended.
We got 2 minutes left. The regulation, it sounds like, needs to be on the institutions, not necessarily on the families.
Yeah, look, parents need to parent their kids, and that's a parental rights issue for me. But I think that the government has created a monopoly and then has insulated that monopoly from any kind of open market impulses or civil liability by parents who may want to bring suit. It's kind of like the tobacco industry in the 1990s. Remember how it was revealed that the tobacco industry was, chemically altering their product to make it more addictive and then specifically marketing it to children. And several states took action and there was a master settlement agreement and that market was forever changed and reformed. I see the same thing on the horizon for big tech. It may look different in its execution, but the same thing's going to happen.
Well, I would like more data to back up what I'm saying to my kids, as if showing them a chart would make them understand.
That's right.
No.
I feel better though, right? I mean,
here's the deal, folks. Parents, what you got to do is when you take away the fun things the other kids are doing, then you have to participate in living life with your kids in fun ways that other families don't spend time doing. Because no kid really wants to spend all day staring at a phone. It is an addiction.
I think they'd rather hang out with their mom and dad, or at least my kids. You know, they're still young enough that they appreciate that.
I don't know if they want to hang out with mom and dad. You got to take them to a cool place where mom and dad also is.
and then you
are all together. Maybe bring some friends along. Attorney General Andrew Bailey, thank you for coming in today. It's been great having you.
Thanks, Annie. Appreciate you.
We appreciate you as well. On X at AG Andrew Bailey. Go follow him there and you can keep up to date with all of the legal action that he's continuously taking on behalf of the Missourians. And as an adopted Missourian myself, even in Illinois, it's nice to know that freedom is still being protected somewhere. We'll have all of this up on the podcast. Join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. We're going to be back with Jim Carafano at 1:25 in the next hour and a possible Joe Biden executive order on immigration at 1. We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.